What flavor vapes do you have? This, I want to ask this. This is what we'll talk about.
Oh, no. The answer is going to, out me even worse as the worst kind of vaporizer. Pina colada, Alice.
I was going to say, are you a fruity boy?
Very fruity. Very fruity indeed, yes. You heard it here first. I love pina colada and... There's also...
And getting caught in the rain.
Yes, I do, actually. I met my partner that way. Turns out we were married. Start a YouTube channel where we do like 50 second shorts over funk explaining the plots of 80s songs.
Yes, let's do that. Welcome listeners to this series 3 episode 11 of the Electronic Wireless Show, Rock Paper Shotgun's PC Gaming Podcast, and the only podcast you need in my opinion, which is that of Alice Bell. I'm joined this week by Nate Crowley. Hello, Nate.
Hello.
We've got no jams this week. He's in a deals mine. Strapped to a deals wheel.
Down on the deals wheels.
So we'll do our own
steel.
The deals of steel. Oh, how are you, Nate?
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good. I'm trying to think if anything's noteworthy has actually happened in my life over the last 7 days. I'm probably going to come up empty-handed, so I'm hoping you've been busy.
No. I mean, it was St. Patrick's Day. I went to my friend Ash's house and had Bailey's coffee.
What's St. Patrick's Day like in Ireland? Is it a big deal?
Yes and no. It's for the kids, really, I think. So they do, most towns have like a St. Patrick's Day parade and they're amazing. There's one in my town. They have like tiny miniature Shetland ponies and they have people, stilt walkers, dressed as vaguely Irish mythological things, and they'll have like just a load of tractors just driving through.
Do they have all the town ne'er-do-wells rounded up and dressed as poor sort of pantomime snakes to be thrashed out of the town?
No, don't do that.
Stick wielding children.
No, that would be good. They have like, if there's a dance school nearby, all the kids last year, they came dancing down the street to the same looping bit of Westlife. they just have a great old time. But it's, you know, if there's like a local theatre troupe or like local shops or sometimes drive a van down, that sort of thing. So it's just like, I'm trying to think of like an equivalent because we don't give a fuck about St. George's Day in the UK.
And maybe bonfire night?
Yeah, maybe something like that. But it's you know, there's face painting and like, you know, fireworks and stuff. It is for the kids more than anything. And then teenagers will get drunk and then adults eventually will bring their children to look at it dressed in green clothes.
I think if I was in charge of the festival, I would focus more on the conflict between like religious warriors and serpents. I think that's pretty cool. Gets lost in a lot of the fun.
It's funny,
how many saints just did in reptiles?
Well, the conventional wisdom...
It happened twice, but...
It's like the Protestants... The snakes were Protestants, was that not it? Or druids. It's a metaphor for him, like, cementing Catholicism. Yeah.
Did you think it was literal snakes? Well, I don't actually believe St. Patrick drove the snakes from Ireland, but yeah. Yeah, I thought it was just, well, you know, no snakes here. That's good luck. Let's, credit
that
to a
saint. And then everyone was like, way, this guy got rid of the snakes.
Oh, but once again, it's dehumanizing your opponents is a step to genocide. Brilliant.
Oh, no. Oh, let's swiftly move on. Let's draw a veil over St. Patrick. I don't know. I don't know who he actually was. I don't know where he is. Where is he buried? What happened to St. Patrick?
My favourite saint is St. Olaf. Do you know what he did?
Is it going to be something weird to do with crabs?
No, I wish. I wish. No, he bashed in a bridge. It's literally a big old Viking who tore down London Bridge, but later converted to Christianity and got a medal for it.
Oh, good for him.
Well, a medal of well canonisation. But his symbol is just an axe, and I think that's very funny. There's all these sort of, you know, sort of bearded ascetics who stood up columns for months on end to show their faith and stuff, and then just a brute.
I tell you what, I've gone down the Middleton rabbit hole.
Oh, God, I only found out about this 2 days ago because I don't really go on the internet much.
Oh, I suppose.
It's a bit much, isn't it? What's going on then?
Well, I don't care about the royal family, but I care about how weird everyone's gone about this and all the conspiracies. Like, most of them are jokes. So, like, someone worked out that the amount of time she has been out of the public eye is the same amount of time it takes to recover from a Brazilian butt lift. So,
seriously?
So that's why people are like, she's had a BBL. And other people are like, she was pregnant by someone else, or William got someone else pregnant. There are multiples of royal bastards now popping up, apparently. And all the rumours about him having an affair, which are pretty open secret rumours, I guess.
Yeah.
And there were all those rumours a couple of years ago. It's because he likes pegging and Kate wouldn't do that for him or something, and Ryanair made a joke tweet that they had to delete.
Did they?
Yeah, that was in like 2018 or something, but it was like, we've got a seat for you, William, and it had the middle armrest pointing up. And they deleted it. I don't know where that part of the rumour came from, but yeah, so it's all
only relatable thing the man's ever done.
I know, yeah. So, I mean, the reality is that she probably is just sick and that's it. But
their whole strategy is bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah, they absolutely,
like, especially with the whole bit of legally forbidding UK press to talk about it.
Yeah, that's why it's gone so wild, because everyone's like, well, just say where she is. But I've heard rumours that she has Crohn's disease, like what I have, and she's had intestinal surgery and currently has a stoma.
That's not good.
Well, it's not like,
well, it's not the worst, but it's not pleasant. Yeah.
No, but if she came out and said that's what happened, it would, you know, I'm sure also be very relatable. But nobody likes to think about a princess pooing in a bag, I guess. So, but I've
been, that's actually really fucking sad. Yeah,
I've really like gone. I've reinstalled TikTok just to look at Americans trying to pronounce Chumley and stuff.
Good. Oh my goodness.
I say good, it's terrible. And nothing to do with video games.
Is Chumley the one that's spelled Charmansley?
Cholmondley, yeah.
Stupid society.
I know. Nobody should ever make fun of Irish names ever again. Quite frankly. Anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about. We are here to make fun of something, though. There's a couple of news stories to talk about this week, and we'll start with the funnier one. AI, hot button issue at this year's Game Developers Conference, or JDC, which is going on now. We've got a series about AI that's running on RPS right now called Electric Nightmares, which is by Mike Cook, AI researcher. It's a four-part series. The last part is going up today, and it's looking at like what the future might actually be. The piece yesterday was like, what's the best case scenario for AI? And then today is like, what's the actual realistic scenario for the short term future? And for one company, the short term future of AI is getting made fun of. So at GDC, Ubisoft revealed an AI NPC prototype, which is called Neo NPC. They've been working on it apparently a while. Little R&D team have been working on it. And the idea is that you can talk to these NPCs. So a writer will set the parameters of what this NPC is like and their hopes and dreams and their backstory. And then you talk into a microphone, which is then, you know, scanned. And that is used as like the input for the AI to then spit something back out at you, which is broadly in line with the character's parameters that have been set. They revealed this week at GDC. It's a playable prototype that people have been having a go of. Nate, I've sent you the screenshot that was widely mocked online by people. Can you give me a read of the NPC's dialogue, please?
Hi, you must be Nelson. I can't believe you're finally here. I'm Bloom, your future teammate in the Resistance. By the way, I figured out we could spend some time together to check if we have a compatible vibe. You know, to build our dynamic duo. How does that sound to you?
Okay, great.
Or alternatively, considering this is clearly a member of, you know, some guerrilla resistance movement, he obviously sounds like a youth pastor. Hi, you must be Nelson. I can't believe you're finally here. I'm Bloom, your future teammate in the Resistance, by the way. I figured out we could spend some time together to check if we have a compatible vibe. You know, to build our dynamic duo. How does that sound to you? Ugh.
Sounds awful,
very, very convincing.
It?
Very convincing.
Extremely real person voice.
It's like, really unpleasant reading AI dialogue. So thank you for teaching me that.
it's bad, isn't it? Everyone made fun of it because it's very bad. Nobody would want to spend time with this man.
I don't like his. I haven't got a massive problem with his face. Is his face AI generated as well, though?
I don't think so. Or at least that has not been confirmed.
But that's interesting, because as soon as you know there's some piss in the burger, you start to think the whole burger's piss.
God, that would be an awful burger.
The worst burger, yeah.
Even if there's no piss in the bun or the lettuce, if you know there's piss in the meat, you're like...
The smell's everywhere, yeah.
It might as well all be piss, you know?
Well, yeah, and that's... Oh dear. I found actually whenever I do Google image search now, I am instantly just thinking so many of the results are going to be AI that I actually overlook real photos just because I assume they're going to be AI. It's really weird. Like, my skepticism towards it has got to a level now where I'm doubtful of a lot of things. I didn't expect that to happen so soon. And not because the real stuff's convincing, just because it's ubiquitous.
I did see something that was like the hack for that is to put in like before 2021 or whatever when you're searching images.
Oh, really?
Whenever AI kind of, you know, Midjourney and that kind of took off.
But that's, it is a annoying. Great idea.
Like, I was trying to look up the new Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, and if you put it into YouTube, all the first results are just like AI bullshit accounts being like official Beetlejuice 2 trailer and stuff, and it's all clearly fake. It's a load of shit. It's ruining things. Just all these bots and stuff.
I don't know. I always kind of hoped the internet would go away, and maybe it will happen as everyone gets bored of it.
It might do, yeah.
A man can dream. Then...
But then when you did a podcast, you'd just be talking to yourself or your fish by yourself for an hour.
Hey, Henry Cavill is great company.
Oh, God love him.
That's for readers who aren't to know, Henry Cavill Henry Warhammer Cavill is the name of my better fish. I don't have a worse fish. That's just the name of the thing.
There was some stuff in Ubisoft's official announcement of it, there was some stuff that I thought was interesting to sort of think about more that they didn't really go into. One is that they're trying to filter out toxicity and inappropriate inputs on the part of the player, and sort of trying to figure out the parameters of like how the AI reacts to antagonism, which I think is an interesting thing. And there was also a small section on catching bias, in quotes, where they revealed that they created a female character, specified she was attractive, and then the AI veered towards being like seductive because it had been told it was an attractive woman. Like, where did that come from? What's the data set here that this is trained on, you know?
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Like... Huh. I really want to read AI researcher Mike Cook's series on RPS now, for real.
Whereas before, you had no interest.
I was merely feigning polite enthusiasm, but now I'm, yeah, well up for it.
One last thing to add about this. First of all, GDC revealed, I think there was a poll, I can't remember, that something like half of developers say that they or someone they know in their team is using AI somewhere, but this is skewed highly towards the kind of business and finance and that sort of end of things. So as much fewer frontline developers are using it in their kind of workflow, day-to-day workflow. So it sounds like dudes who can't be bothered to write like slides for their PowerPoint are maybe using it more. And the other thing which I found very funny is that Lucy James, games journalist who's at GDC, she tweeted that she asked Ubisoft's Neo AI NPC if he was a child of divorce. So I asked, what did he say? And she said, he said no, but his ex-wife and kid were no longer in the picture.
Oh. That doesn't really make sense, does it?
I'm not a child of divorce, but my child is a child of divorce.
That's interesting. So what has it, like, has it just misunderstood the question then?
No, I don't think so. I think it's a related thing, isn't it? It's like she said, are you a child of divorce? Referencing a very niche joke from Taskmaster. And the AI was like, no, I'm not a child. No, my parents are together, but my wife and kid have left me. Which is presumably actually something set by the writer, right?
Interesting.
So the writer has put in, Bloom is, you know, was married, has a child. And unless the AI has invented that, which is kind of interesting as well.
I mean, the problem is with this as well. Like, I'm so often like responding with my ideology on things rather than with my brain. And like, I guess I'm interested in the idea if the game's writer wrote... Well, you can't write the whole language set that one of these Leviathans is trained on. I don't know. But, like, yeah, if the technology is being used to sort through, you know, a quantity of written material to provide relevant answers to player prompts, I'd be hard-pressed to find a problem with that that wasn't ideological and sort of knee-jerk. But that, I don't think that's what's being suggested here.
Well, yeah, so, like, the question is about the where that, you know, training data is from, because a lot of the time it's just scraped. So, like, my book has been scraped. I know that. Someone did not buy my book and put it into a language learning model.
Does that mean our books have had kids? In someone's, like, fucking final sixth form essay on the history of China.
And, like, you know, there's an artist who does a lot of the Magic the Gathering art and cards and stuff, who, his work is very popular with nerds. And so a lot of them will just be like, you know, dragon in style of this guy, which doesn't seem fair, do you know?
No.
That his work has been used to replicate his work kind of unfairly, you know. So I don't think that's cool, and it's not that the writers are writing all the data to train these models. The models are already trained, and then within that the writers, I believe how it works, the writers will be like, this person is optimistic and whatever. And and wife has left him, whatever. And then from that, the AI is working off.
Yeah, to totally qualify my statement, like, if the creative team at Ubisoft were writing the entire training database for the large language model, that would be fine. But that would also be an insane use of resources, so we don't really need to discuss it.
Yeah, which is why I just write stuff. Like,
yeah.
I understand that, like, writers don't like having to write, like, you know, 20 variations on the same combat bark or whatever. But at the same time, like, I don't want to have just, like, an experience. Like, that's not why I play video games. I want to, and this was pointed out by a lot of people who responded to this tweet, like, I want to experience something that was made by someone who has an opinion about the world and is you know, trying to communicate that through what they've written, which I think is why a lot of AAA games are so boring, because they're trying to, like, by a committee, be as inoffensive as possible. Like, Starfield doesn't have a fucking opinion about anything.
If I can be totally sincere and probably a bit pretentious for a second, like, I'm absolutely with you on that. I think, I think any act of creativity is basically a way of roughly transliterating a thought you had in your head into someone else's, and it will be a different thought because nothing is ever the same written down as it is read. And I think that's beautiful and literal magic. And if you remove one of the consciousnesses from that equation, it breaks. There's no longer any magic going on. Or if you obfuscate it via, you know, 10,000 bits of intermediation, you know, via a language model, yeah, the spell no longer works because there's no connection between the magician and the caster.
And eventually as well, and Mike Cook makes this point, I think, like, you need fresh data for these learning models, like, for the art and for the text and all of it, because if there is not new stuff to feed into it, if you get rid of artists with AI art, if you get rid of, like, you know, journalists in favor of, like, an AI that will instantly compress the information you need, you lose accuracy and you lose kind of all of it. They will collapse because they can't keep iterating on themselves. It can't be a closed loop, you know. So
do you want to talk about pirates?
Yeah, let's talk about pirates. So World of Warcraft is adding a PvEvp battle royale mode with pirates.
Yo ho, fiddle me dee.
Yeah, so what your relationship with World of Warcraft is, it's largely as a role player, isn't it?
Yes. Pretending to be a wizard called Gundolf, who's definitely not Gandalf.
Yeah. Yes. I remember that.
And of course, I've been a long-standing, near decade veteran Hearthstone addict now as well.
Hmm. So this is, it's not kind of what you might think. So Alice, I wrote about this and said, what's surprising about Plunderstorm is how much it isn't simply World of Warcraft but Battle Royale. It follows a lot of the usual Battle Royale template, sure, but it changes a lot of how WoW works. You have no class, for starters, with your abilities determined by what you loot in the arena. These aren't just regular WoW abilities either, offering weird bespoke abilities not found in the main game. So it's a separate, whole separate character, though you do unlock cosmetics for your main characters. It's a whole separate, like, game mode that you choose from the start menu, and it drops 60 pirate players into the Arathi Highlands to, you know, fight, loot, and fight each other. It's due to run only for a few weeks. And yeah, it sounds interesting.
Yeah, it sounds intuitive as well, if I'm honest. And the reason I mention Hearthstone is because they've had great success doing this sort of thing there. For example, in the auto battler mode, Battlegrounds, I don't know if it's still more popular than the base card game, but it certainly did become so quite soon after implementation. And in actual fact, I haven't played the actual game of Hearthstone in about 3 years now. I've just been playing Battlegrounds, which was, you know, again, a kind of, well, let's test and see if we can do an auto battler with the same engine but with different rules. And it was great. And now I would say it's one of a number of things that's prolonged Hearthstone's life, perhaps unnaturally, because you have players like me who just long ago saw the limitations of the appeal of the main game, but found another source of nectar from the same menu. So I am playing a different game, but it looks like Hearthstone, and I still call it playing Hearthstone, but I'm not. So I think, yeah, this is moving that strategy across horizontally to a game that, you know, my God, has already lived like a proper Arthas of a lifespan, and may give it some more yet.
Yeah, it's interesting because Battle Royale, like Fortnite, was originally called Fortnite Battle Royale, and it was a mode that they slapped on to a game that wasn't doing very well. It was just called Fortnite, which was a base building management time thing.
For real?
Yeah. It wasn't that good. It was like zombies would come at night and you had to build your base and protect it. And then in the morning you'd collect stuff and do little missions and build up your base a bit more. It was kind of rubbish.
But the name finally makes sense.
Yeah. Because you built a little fort.
I never knew that.
Then they slapped on a PUBG mode to see what would happen. It just fucking exploded because it made PUBG accessible and brightly coloured to like children, basically. Whereas before it was the kind of realism, serious shooter soldier boy kind of thing. So maybe this will become its own thing. I don't know. So your characters start over each match. So it's different every time. But you do have persistent progression to unlock rewards for your regular account. So you get piratey outfits. Get a little parrot mount. Crab pet.
Of course there's a crab. Actually, here's a good question then. If you could move any type of game genre or, you know, style of play, like a battle royale, to any game of your choosing, so it has to be made with the engine of that game, but is a separate button on the menu, and it can be any type of game you like, what would you choose?
Oh, that's a good one.
That's a banger.
I don't know.
Should do that as next week's episode.
I like it whenever a murder mystery pops up in like any kind of game, like an RPG or whatever, and you have to do like, you know, find out who done it. I just think it's cool. I just think it's neat.
I would love it if the 40K Power Wash Simulator came as a menu option on like Space Marine 2.
Oh yeah, unlike anything.
If you had to go and clean up everything that had been used during the mission, that'd be so good.
That would be good. Oh, yeah. Actually, speaking of, this is a good transition. Let's move on to talk about...
I was throwing the egg at you and you've smashed it into the bowl.
Let's talk about what we've been playing this week. Nice. Have you been playing much or are you just doing your usual history fights?
Just my usual history fights, yeah. The voice in UK games journalism with least to say about games. But I haven't really done too much this week, no. What about yourself?
Well, I've been playing something for review that I can't talk about. It's actually quite a short game. It's not out for a while, but the embargo is like a couple of weeks away still, or at least a week, I think. So I played that. I've been playing a game called Witch Hand, which is...
You have to guess which hand a toddler is holding a cat poo in.
No, it's and it's all cards and the guy's a dickhead.
Inscription?
No.
But you have to admit that's a good summary of Inscription.
Yeah, that's good. Oh God, I can't remember what it's called.
The film Maverick?
It's played all with cards, so you're a little witch, and you are represented by a card, and then you do your spells by stacking cards and resources together, and it's all timed. Cultist Simulator.
Right, yes.
So it's a Cultist Simulator-like, but it's like an unproblematic fave. It's really cute. You summon familiars that are little cats, and then you summon buildings in your like coven with spells and use resources and stuff, and some of them are training buildings to make your familiars into like a warrior cat or like a merchant cat, or a sort of like a little wizard cat that has some of your power, so it can do spells as well. And they make nothing makes a noise. They all just make like pick up and put down card noises, apart from your cat familiars, and they just go meow 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 when you like.
This sounds quite pleasant.
Yeah, it's really nice. I like it a lot. I've played a bunch of it. I'm not very good at it, But I'm surprised there aren't more games sort of riffing off that formula with different themes. There might be, that I wasn't aware of, but I am now aware of Witch Hand, and I recommend it. It's cute. I've also played Nancy Drew Message in a Haunted Mansion as part of my effort to play all the Nancy Drew games. I've fallen well behind, but this is the third one I played out of about 30. It's probably my least favourite, but you can read about
that's damning.
This
out
week.
Of a family of 30 to be the run to the litter.
Well, I've only done three so far.
So. Oh, well, you may have depths yet to plumb.
Exactly, yeah. But also, I've been playing a little
bit. You're
going to
close the segue.
Huh?
I'm going
to close the segue. I've also been playing, and I haven't played loads of it, Warhammer 40k Darktide, because it is our game club game of the month, as picked by Jams, who's not here. And I've enjoyed what I've played, but I would like, I have some questions. So,
yes.
Because I don't know anything really about 40k. So I want to ask you about something, because seeing it all without any explanation, this is why I think explaining lore is shit, because it makes it less interesting. However,
yes.
I am going to ask the questions about stuff that I saw that I was like, that's really cool. I want to know more about that. So, first of all,
right.
Why does everything or a lot of things have a little wax seal with a bit of like sanctified paper on it?
There can be many things. They're generally called purity seals.
Yes. Yeah. Them.
But there's also something called an oath of the moment. For example, a space marine can swear that he's going to pull your head right off, and he'll write it on a bit of parchment and stick it to his armor, and he then has to do it, or he's an idiot. But yeah, there's actually...
Well, like right then.
Just exactly. Yeah, if you can't pull your head off, he'd have to pull off his own, I suppose.
But how do you create like a little wax seal in that moment?
Well, I think it would be more like, I swear by the end of this campaign, I will have pulled off 1,000 traitors' heads.
I see, okay, yeah.
And then you'd have like a, you know, someone in a robe put it on you. But interesting, in one of Chris Wright's books, which are excellent, because he goes into this sort of thing, apart from anything else, there's like a 5-page, like, bit about the parchment industry on Holy Terror, aka Earth, in the year 40,000. And it is fascinating, because like, how do you provide enough parchment for... You know, an imperium of planets of quadrillions of people that has reverse gone paperless. It's cool.
So what's a purity seal then?
I think it just says like, you know, we've made the machine spirits in this calculator restive. It's okay to use. And then they put the seal on the back and you know it's cool. It's I guess it's, you know, like so many things in 40K, it's like medieval religious material culture.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, also, they just flutter. Looks cool, doesn't it?
It does look cool. Okay, what? What? There was just like a little floating skull hanging about.
That's a servo skull, yeah.
What do they do? What's to do with that guy?
So you might have heard one of the sort of memed phrases that goes around in 40K is, even in death, I still serve. And that's like a huge thing. So if you were a very, you know, committed and pious lifelong bureaucrat, your reward might be that when you're dead, your skull gets turned into a little like camera drone for use by someone better than you. Yeah, there's a book, Denny Flowers, again, a really good one, called Outgunned, which is about a propagandist who's sent to cover an air war. And he's got the skull of, like, a really famous propagandist who he's always really admired as, like, his documentary camera.
Oh, that's kind of sweet.
Yeah, and the suggestions, you know, there might have been some elements of sort of, you know, memory carried across or something. But don't want to speak for the book, but it's that's cool as hell. Because he refers to it as the name of this documentarian. And it's clearly not a person. It's not sentient. It's, you know, just, it's a camera drone in a casing of human bone. But it's kind of got personality.
Huh. Okay. And why when you go through a wormhole do you have to strap loads of men into seats and then they go a bit mental?
Oh yeah, because you have to go through hell to get anywhere faster than light.
Okay.
I suppose the big kind of, if you were to say, right, what is it that separates 40K's universe physically from our own? Like, what is the rule of the universe that's different? And that is that in 40K's, there is a second universe made entirely out of emotions. And anything that anyone feels in this universe has an impact on that. And through a very long chain of events in the deep past, it got torn open and kind of intermixed with ours. And that is what chaos is in 40K. It's the influence of that kind of second universe. But handily, you can also use it to take massive shortcuts through real space. So yeah, that's kind of the dark bargain in 40K. We've got access to extremely, extremely powerful faster than light travel, but we have to literally go into a nightmare world with our spaceships. They don't always come out. And if your Geller field, which is what keeps the nightmares out, fails while you're in the warp, that would be very bad.
Well, I was going to ask, I don't know if you'd get too excited, but if I was going to start somewhere, so like, I'm not really interested in like big war stuff, but where, so that being the case, are there things in the Black Library that you'd recommend maybe?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's this great guy, Nate Crowley, putting out bangers day after day.
I don't know about him.
Yeah, no, he's a bit sus. But the usual place to start is, I would say, Eisenhorn by Dan Abnett. It's one of the, it's like old for a start. And it's not perfect, like, but it's really foundational and good. And it doesn't get you bogged down in 50 books of the Horus Heresy. Which honestly, I would say, you know, steer clear of unless that's something you decide you want to do. Like having an extra limb grafted on, you know, it's a commitment.
Okay. My other question then, knowing that, is, and, you know, feel free to not answer this in case you incriminate yourself, but do you, when you write for the Black Library, do you have to, like, have, like, a cross-reference with, like, stuff so that you're not conflicting with, like, law or, like, established canon or whatever? Or
we try as hard as we can. Like, a lot of people think there is one big book of facts at the studio.
Like a Bible, yeah.
No, there's a, like, for such a huge IP with so many words in it that it would just be impossible to do. And so it genuinely is best efforts, which is, I think, lubricated by the idea that it's not like, I think it was Aaron Dembski Bowden, who's one of the other authors, said, like, well, everything is canon, it might not necessarily be true. So my Gazgul book, for example, takes the form of an interrogation about Gazgul and has a lot of contradicting facts in it. And that's kind of one of the whole things I was playing at with it. I love unreliable narrators. They're great fun. And I think everyone in Warhammer is an unreliable narrator by default because it's this sort of Dark Ages setting, which is too big and sprawling to have a proper understanding of anyway. And so the idea that any given narrator might just be telling you their own, you know, entirely fanciful version of the material reality is great fun.
Well, Darktide,
like, the skulls might have living brains in them. You know, who knows?
Darktide is, I think, a good entry point for me, similar to how the Power Wash Sim DLC was, because you're just like you're not an important person. You're just like a little drone. And stuff going on above your head kind of doesn't really matter, you know? And I like stories like that in, like, you know, big huge epic worlds. I like that. What's the normal person's life like, you know?
Yeah.
Like what's it like being a farmer on one of the big monocultured agri worlds, do you know?
Oh yeah, there is a lot of that in the books.
Yeah.
That's like, the bits we all enjoy writing most.
Do you know anything about the Omegaverse?
No, I don't.
So the Omegaverse is a subspecies of like fan fiction that later became like erotic, self-published, largely fiction, where they map sexual relationships loosely on the debunked alpha, omega, beta theory of wolves. I won't go into detail because the details are terrifying, but I will link to one of my favorite podcasts. Did an episode on a lawsuit that happened within the Omegaverse, and in that podcast they say like, I don't want to hear about like the alphas who are, so like the betas are basically the dry boys who are just like normies, and like these guys are like, I don't want to hear about like the alphas who are like fucking everywhere and stuff. I want a story like a domestic drama about like a beta whose wife is like, have you ever wondered what it would be like if you were an alpha? or like just about a beta who's just like, you know, an administrative assistant or whatever, and like keeping the world running.
Yeah, honestly, like I think those are some of the best stories in time fiction. Actually, I will do my recommendation this week ahead of time, because I'd forget it otherwise, and it's a better answer to your question than Eisenhorn. The best entry point for anyone into 40K would be a short story that came out last year called The Sum of Its Parts, and it is a montage in several sections about the multiple century-long lifespan of a mass-produced tank, and it is It's like War Horse about a very aggressive box. It's by Rory James, and it is fucking phenomenal. Like a really lovely short story, and you wouldn't have to know the first thing about 40K to enjoy it.
Okay, all right, I'll take that recommendation. I got recommended by, I've got a friend called Jamie who I met at university. He's like the only person from uni I'm still sort of mates with, and he really likes movies, and every so often he'll text me about a film. Last night he texted me saying, you seen The Taste of Things? And I said, I have not. And he just texts back saying, lot of big boys eating big meals. I was like, that's the best and most concise recommendation that has made me want to watch a film.
Yeah, that's solid.
But yeah, if you've not played Dark Tide, it's a kind of co-op horde shooter. It's fun. You pick one of four classes, and you are shooting, I think, chaos hordes. Not
pretty
really
much.
Entirely sure. Yeah.
It's left 40K dead.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Very good.
Thank you.
They should put that on the... I was going to say, they should put that on their pipe and smoke it. That's a mixed metaphor, isn't it? Very tired.
Do you want to pop up to the tower before we kill this thing?
Let's. Yeah, I'd love to.
Well, welcome to the Tower of Jocularity.
What's going on in the tower this week?
We're in the, I was going to say we're on a pirate ship, because this is linking to the World of Warcraft story. But I noted that was actually set in some highlands, which is where you wouldn't expect to find pirates. So I guess we're in the highlands and we're pirates.
Way.
We're going to play a classic pirate game. Familiar to all listeners, sweeten the deal. But we're going to play a specific version of it. There's one question I want to ask you, Alice.
Okay.
And that's how much money I would have to give you to play World of Warcraft for the rest of your life.
For the rest of my life. Every waking moment. Like, no downtime.
How much would I have to pay you?
I don't get to do anything else. I don't get to like read. I don't can like.
We don't set terms before the game has begun, Miss Bell.
I don't know, honestly.
Okay, let
I
me
cannot...
alter this proposition. Let me alter this proposition, because yeah, that is wild. Okay.
I don't think I would want 12 to do
hours
only...
a day for the rest of your life.
Okay, okay.
So I'm asking for half of your remaining life to be logged in and playing World of Warcraft.
Okay, 12 hours is more manageable because like I couldn't do just one of anything for the rest of my life.
And I don't mind negotiating it as a per year thing, like because you don't know how long you'll live, obviously.
Yeah, like, so if I think of it as like a salaried position.
But the crucial thing is that can't stop. You know, like you're making a commitment, you know, because the money's paid at the end. Oh, no, yeah. Wait. Because then you'd be dead.
Yeah, I'd need it like a salary, because I need it like
no,
a
No, we
wage.
Can't get onto negotiation. Okay, lump sum. No, it's take it or leave it. Lump sum.
Well, lump World sum when Warcraft. I die.
No, right now, ahead of time, World okay, of Warcraft, okay, okay. 12 hours for life.
Okay,
yeah, the money's taken back by bailiffs if you ever stop.
Okay, how old am I now? Okay, so we say maybe 60 years. Jesus Christ.
What if I said 20 mil?
Oh no, there's nowhere near enough. At least a mil a year, at least.
Right. I'm prepared to offer 40 million, final offer.
No, I reject the segment. Let's move on. Okay, no, fine. No, all right, fine. I'll play the game. 40 million, fine.
Okay. This is going to be I have set myself maybe too big a bite to chew. Garrosh Hellscream is real.
Oh, is he my mate?
Yeah. And but it will cost 5 million.
When you say what? When you say he's real, like what?
He's a real guy.
Is he playing World of Warcraft as himself? Like what?
Yeah. He looks like the mole on your telly, but it's actually him.
Okay.
Like, and he does like pass the Turing test, and you know, he's a living conscious being, and that's not a nightmare to him. Like, he's okay with it.
He's okay with it. Okay. Yeah. That's important. Okay. And I can have chats with him in that. 5 million.
I mean, it's still a life-changing amount of money, but then it's a life-changing task.
Yeah, and that's 5 million is quite a lot. If I go below a mil a year, I don't know if it's worth it. Can I... 2?
No, I think that's... You know, we are creating artificial life specifically for this, so it's going to need at least 5 mil to hire that many people to market the AI.
Yeah, that's true. But there are, I mean, it's World of Warcraft, so it's WoW as it is kind of today, right?
Yes. Or Classic, if you prefer.
Okay, but that, so that means there are other players.
Oh, yeah, you are, yeah. It's not your own World of Warcraft, but Garrosh is real, and everyone can benefit from that. So you're giving Garrosh to the world.
Nah, it's not worth it. I'll make friends with other real people in the game, you know?
Garrosh wasn't even worth 5 million. Okay. Well, you make friends in MMO. Curious. Okay. all right. I haven't got... No, I'm not going to use my nuke yet. You feel happier for every consecutive hour that you play. Like culminating in a state of what I would call mild euphoria, equivalent to taking a slightly above the recommended dose of cocodamol. And that's yours for 2 million.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, that's too cheap. Okay, I'm panicking. I'm using the nuke. You no longer need to sleep. But it only costs 5 million. You're only getting paid 5 million to do it now. So you just got half your life back.
I've got half my life back, but I'm only getting 5 million total for playing WoW for 12 hours a day. Is that what?
Yeah. And you don't need to sleep.
Yeah, I
like you're going to have proportionately, experientially, a very long life. just a lot of it will be playing World of Warcraft.
I don't know. Can I play WoW whenever I want? Like, I don't have to play it at set times.
Yes, but remember your cumulative happiness effect stops the second you log off. It'd probably be like an MDMA come down, actually. Be quite severe, just stepping away from the computer.
I mean, I am capable of being happy at other times, surely.
Would you, though, after that long in Garrosh's realm? Oh, actually, that could become really toxic, because he might, like... What if you were the only person who believed he was real? He is.
I didn't pay for that.
It's happening anyway.
Well,
who do you think gave you the power to not sleep, if not Garrosh? When you looked back and saw there were only one set of footprints in the sand, were they not an orc's feet?
I've seen some good tweets, but that one was like, what about when the footprints were all like weird and like all over the place? And Jesus is like, well, when you walk without rhythm, the sand works.
I'm going to concede. I can't get you to pay to play World of Warcraft for life.
No.
I can't.
There's no way you're going to get me to pay. I wasn't on board with getting paid to do it. Your starting premise was faulty.
It seemed so much better when I first thought of it.
I'm sorry.
But then I was playing Hearthstone at the time.
Oh. Does Hearthstone give you a cumulative MDMA effect?
I wish. No.
The thing is as well is that World of Warcraft has changed a lot since since you and I last played it. Actually, it's Ed and Liam did a video on it called Inventory Space about whether it's possible to play these live service games as part of your life anymore. And it seems World of Warcraft is not, kind of. You can't play it, like, for fun. You have to play it as, like, almost a job, you know?
Really?
Yeah.
And it's gone more in that direction.
Yeah, there's another video as well by Dan Olsen, who I really like, who plays WoW, knows people who play WoW. And it's called Why It's Rude to Suck at Warcraft, and it's about how it's become optimized and you can't just like do your best kind of thing. Like, yeah. So I'll link those in the show notes as well if anyone's interested.
Genuinely fascinated, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry I ruined the premise of your Sweeten the Deal by being a curmudgeon.
No, you are just the world-class player of the game you are, and I should have treated you with more respect, frankly. I'll be back with something better next time. Don't worry, okay. This just deepens the rivalry.
All right. One of my proudest moments, though, is when I remembered...
Oh, the toilet clause
on
the yacht.
The toilet clause on the Jeff Keighley raft.
That was a legendary moment in the game. Still talked about by commentators today.
Was it like I did you a dark bargain where I was like, if I can guess what your last offer is going to be, will you just give it to me for free or something?
That was it, yeah. And you saw I was going to try and sell you the shitter.
Yeah. But much like Kate Middleton, I must always know, I'm always aware of where the nearest toilet is. It's like a spidey
sense.
There you
go. Yeah. Crime superpowers.
Yeah. Oh dear. Well, that is all we've got time for this week on the Electronic Wireless Show podcast. But every week we recommend something that isn't a video game. So Nate, what are you going to recommend? I know you've already said, but do you want to like...
No, I was thinking of something else about 30 seconds ago. Yes, actually. I've never done this one, so I guess it's legit. Since we've been talking about the culture in MMO games, I am going to recommend the actually quite good but commercially disastrous animated series Realms of Fighting, which I wrote in, I think, 2013, 2014, something like that, which was a sort of gentle satire on the idea of a man living in an MMO, and he was doing it through a mechanism that was never explained in order to avoid paying rent, and he got caught up in the world first attempt, and it was quite charming.
Oh, fun. Okay. That's fighting with an E on the end, isn't it? I remember that.
Yes, that was also a really bad idea that made it impossible to search for,
Oh, no. God, what am I going to recommend? I didn't come prepped with one this week. I might have to do the Nate special of looking at whatever's closest to me.
Yeah, what's around you, Alice? Oxygen, yeah, that's good. Yeah,
oxygen's great. I've got loads of scented candles.
Lovely.
I've got some gloves. I've got, I don't know, what have I got?
All the classic objects so far.
A sloth. Mate, I haven't done anything. I recommended the beekeeper already, didn't I?
I wasn't there last week. You might have done.
If I didn't, but
you could recommend
beekeeper,
it to me.
I recommend The Beekeeper. It's a new Jason Statham film where he plays a retired. Like, the idea is that there's one, like, in. I guess they operate mainly in the United States, but there's just one, like, cool assassin who operates kind of outside the law to just kill people that are deemed like a threat to society. And Jason Statham was one, and they're called beekeepers, and Jason Statham really takes the bee thing very literally, and and he keeps bees, and then the whole way through he talks about protecting the hive. He basically stays, he's living on the land of this like nice old lady. She gets killed. Oh no, she kills herself when her money is drained by like an online scam thing. So all her money is taken out of her accounts. And Jason Statham just goes on a like Taken style rampage to kill all the people responsible for this nice old lady's death while screaming about bees.
Okay, I have to say that sounds way better than, because I, much as I love Jason Statham, I was beginning to feel a bit over him, but this may have just put some life back in the old ticker.
It's an incredible film because so much about it is facially bad, like just on its face, very bad elements to this film. The main bad guy, terrible. Jeremy Irons is sort of not doing an American accent, but sometimes is. It none of it makes any sense. Jason Statham also is doing a weird accent. But it's somehow good. Like, I watched it because I thought it was going to be bad, and I like watching bad films. But I was like, this is actually pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's useful because I had been wondering.
Yeah. So I really enjoyed that. And also, I will recommend, because I watched it, rewatched it a few weeks ago, the first How to Train Your Dragon film. It's outstanding.
Oh, it is great, isn't it?
It holds up so, so well. And I've been listening to the soundtrack. It's fucking amazing. Really,
I saw it for the first time last year and was really pleasantly surprised.
It's so charming, isn't it? It's lovely.
I like Toothless. It's very, very good creature design.
I love Toothless.
All the creature designs are banging, actually.
I like, it seems, any animal that has a sufficiently wide face. So I like Toothless. I like Stitch from Lilo and Stitch.
Well, have you noticed how Toothless is basically a dorsoventrally compressed axolotl?
Yes, like axolotls are like frogs. If you've got a flat face with a big wide mouth.
I mean, the NPC speaking AI dialogue had a very wide mouth.
That's true.
It's the new Toothless. There you go.
I don't know if that'll sell it, honestly, mate. All right. Sorry for this slightly ramshackle episode of the Electronic Wireless Show, but we'll be back next week. Might be even more ramshackle. Who knows?
Anything could happen.
Anything could happen. Thank you for listening to this Rock Paper Shotgun's PC Gaming Podcast. You can email us podcast@rockpapershotgun.com. You can join the Discord. The link is in the show notes. There's a little room for chatting about that, about the podcast and about games, and you can hang out. It's a nice place. There's a lot of fish chat on and off. You know, anything can happen. You can find Rock Paper Shotgun on all your favorite and least favorite social media. You just hit the search bar, search for Rock Paper Shotgun. We're probably there, may or may not be active on the platform, you never know. And you can, of course, go to www.rockpapershotgun.com for all of your PC gaming needs. But for now, it's goodbye from me, Alice Bell, and it is goodbye from Nate Crowley. Bye, Nate.
Au revoir.